you know, this world is designed in such a way that humans cannot grow like individually.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, you need something, right? You need people. Like, you know, when they are in group, it's easier for them to grow. Like, it's easier for them to develop. You know, what can a single person do alone? You know, if we say that, you know, okay, this, if you get some examples, like, okay, this guy, he himself alone has done this.
Yeah.
Well, of course, like, okay, he might have been the main part of the role, but of course he required different people. He required different maybe organizations in getting his work done.
Yeah.
So we require people. We need people. You know, if I drive a car, I need someone like who can repair my car. I need someone who can make my car. So, you know, if I say, like, you know, I don't have to do anything with the other people. So yeah, this won't take me anywhere.
Yeah, I do agree with that point of view that we need each other because none of us are perfect, okay? So every individual can actually develop in only one field, one specific thing, and you cannot do everything by yourself. So we need teamwork, we need groups, we need each other in order to develop. And let's discuss it more after a short break.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio and Youth Station at your service. So, in the last part of the episode, we were talking about individualism, ignorance, and the need that we have to each other as a human being. But brother, everything has its own consequences in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, including being ignorant towards other people. There is a group of people who think like being ignorant is something good because when you are ignorant, then, you know, you have less thing to process in your mind and you have more time for yourself in order to develop yourself. And when you develop yourself as the point that you are a part of society, then you are contributing to society too. So how can you actually justify these people that their mindset about ignorance is not good?
Okay, so these kind of people, the indifferent to, you know, regarding the other people, sometimes the different reasons, of course, right?
Yeah.
You know, someone's selfish. He doesn't care about the other people. He doesn't care about his mates. He doesn't care about his friends. What do you all want to do is, you know, I want to achieve this goal. So I at least care about others. So I have to work for this. I'll be working hard for this and I'll achieve my goal. So this person might be selfish. And the other person might be, the reason might be, you know, there are many distractions or his company around him is not focused and they don't have any goals. You know, they are just interesting in wasting the times.
Yeah.
So like, you know, I've got my goals, buddy. I need to do this. You know, I've decided certain achievements for myself. So he said, like, what he does is he moves aside and in his, like, you know, cozy corner, he works for himself and he works hard and he tries to achieve his goals. So the different people's, like, you know, the different reasons for the people in being indifferent to the society, towards the society.
Yeah. So what is your side? I mean, do you choose your cozy corner in order to work on yourself or you try to get involved with the problems of society?
For me, I like to go with the first step, you know, though I try to solve anything like, you know, for example, studying and all. Like, let's just go with a basic example, like studying for the exam. So, you know, I like to go with the first step, you know, that I gather around my friends and I like to study with them. We all study together.
Nice.
So, you know, I like to go in this way. You know, for anything, you know, there's something, there's any issue that I need to solve. You know, first of all, I try to gather, get around with the other people to solve this problem.
Yeah.
So I like this way much better. Because, you know, what happens is when you're studying, you don't know something, your friend might help you. And if he doesn't know anything, you can help him.
Yeah.
So when people are together, they fill each other's empty spaces.
Nice.
This is the best thing about being together. And this is the best thing about growing together. You fill others, you know, you fill the other party's empty space.
Yeah. You know, actually, me myself, I have a different viewpoint here. And I do believe that people can complete each other and their each other's flaws and something like that. But I think I should have a specific time for myself, only for myself,
mm-hmm.
you know. And no one actually can enter this part of my life. My future, my goals, my wishes, my religious beliefs and all of these aspects together, and I feel like I don't need anyone to interpret these parts of my life for me, because mm-hmm. I want to do it myself with all my power. And but it doesn't mean that I don't spend time with other people, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I try to keep a balance, actually, distribution between
do you think that
times.
You can do the work better when you're alone or
yeah,
with the help
alone,
of someone?
Alone. When I'm alone, I feel like I have the authority of choosing what to do and what not to do, and what are the important hints, what are not the important hints, and so many other things. And because of that, I feel better when I'm
so again, alone. Yeah, we reached to a conclusion, right, that it's subjective.
Yeah.
You know, some people like doing things alone, and some people like doing things in a group.
Yeah, so it is something subjective, but do you agree that it is becoming something more than being subjective about these things? It's becoming being selfish, you know? I mean, the youth generation is becoming selfish and they don't want to help each other. I mean, it's not about the taste anymore. It's about their decision to not help other people. So let's keep the answer of this question after the break. Allah, ya Allah,
subhanallah. If you have any suggestion, our email is englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is your station. And brother, I ask you this question that we will actually going through a path of selfishness these days. What do you think about it?
Like, as we were mentioning, like, you know, the two ways of being subjective, like some people like doing their work alone and some people like doing it in a group. Like, where I told you that, you know, I like doing it with a group, right?
Yeah.
So this is the first stage. This is the first stage. You know, like for studying, example, you know, exams are around the corner. So I need to study for the exam. So I like to study it with my friends, like a group study or something. So we help each other in understanding the subject. So, but then there comes a point where you see that your surroundings, your company is not focused. They're not mindful.
Yeah.
They're not paying attention. So here you decide, oh no, like these guys, you know, you try to help them. You try to, you know, explain to them that, you know, bro, we have exams, like, you know, you try all the ways, right? And even after that, you know, no one's focusing. What do you do over here? You just aside.
Yeah.
You go aside and you start studying on your own. So there's sometimes this is what leads to individualism.
Yeah.
You know, getting tired of the surroundings when they're not listening, when you're not able to change it, you just go in the corner and then study for yourself. So not necessarily it's because being selfish. But sometimes, yeah, it's about being selfish. You know, and the selfishness might come due to envy.
Yeah.
You have envy regarding your classmates, your friends. You know, you don't want them to score good. And so you say, like, you know, I just study alone, you know, I will understand everything. I'll give a great exam and I'll score good.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care about my friend. Whatever
exactly.
He does,
So, brother, you gave us two important hints up to here that I'm going to wrap them up. Then I think we have to end this beautiful episode. After that, you know, you mentioned that there is a point, there is a time or situation that other people force you and lead you to a way of individualism. And this is not your fault to choose it, or this is not out of your selfishness to work on your own, but it's other people that they don't provide you with the things that you deserve, at least in this group work or teamwork, and this is a necessity for you to go and work on yourself. But there is a time that you do it out of your selfishness, out of envy, out of jealousy, and these sort of things that we are facing as human beings, and that's another story. So the first step is to differentiate between these two things and to understand what is the best for you. But at the end of the day, we are social human beings, and it doesn't matter how many times we try to be isolated, but at least we have our own communications. The most important hint here is to control these communications and to try to be a better person at every stage of your life. So, brother, I think it was all the time we had for today's episode. Thank you, dear listeners, for being with us and listening to us. And that's it. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Allah. Ya Allah. Ya Allah. Allah,
Allah, Allah. Hoş geldin.
Part 1.
He was born in a village in the heart of the desert. At the age of 5, he became a shepherd in the village, a young shepherd who grazed sheep with his bare feet, and at night his mother would remove the thorns off his hands and feet with a needle. During the entire fall and winter, he worked hard and his hands were frostbitten due to severe cold. Every time the teacher hit him on the back of his hands with a piece of wet branch from pomegranate tree, and he would start crying out loud, his father would shout from the yard in his house, "Don't hit him. Have a little fairness. Qasem's hands are not dirty. His skin has become black." And as far as he could remember, he was always waiting for the spring to come to bring warmth with it. Even though his hands never fired a bullet, they prevented many hands from shedding the blood of innocent people. And after he fell, people in the world didn't shake hands warmly for a long time. A man with a bright future, with a stature to stand tall. When he was 13, he learned about the secret of his parents' whispers at night. He found out that his dad owed 900 tomans to the agricultural bank and could not repay it. he decided to drop out of school and go to the city to find a job and lend it to his father. It was the first time he was shouldering a big responsibility, and he succeeded. At the age of 15, he enrolled in the Kerman Workers Club in the field of karate. On his card, it was written, "Become strong if you want comfort in this world, because in the system of nature, those who are weak will be trampled upon." This became the motto in his life. He had to make his shoulders stronger for bigger responsibilities. When the revolution happened, he wanted to be an IRGC soldier, but with his wavy hair and his short-sleeved shirt, and with his chest and arms revealing, his appearance didn't fit in with the people in the IRGC. That's why he was rejected by the selection committee of the IRGC. But he insisted, and it worked. Qasim became an IRGC guard. It was in his fate that his right hand was injured. It happened on the first day of the first operation he participated in. So he could no longer fire a bullet with that hand. But because of his experience in military affairs and his ability to lead forces, he remained on the front lines. Although he was a military commander, he made friends with each and every one of his forces and established personal and emotional relationships with them. In the first opportunity, he went to Mecca. After that, everyone knew him by the title Haj Qasim. During the 8 years of the Iraqi-imposed war, he fought in different places. Rivers, deserts, wetlands, and mountains. In his conversation on the radio, he would never say go. He would say come here. Whenever the situation would become hard, he showed his grandeur, and no one would dare oppose him. Everyone knew that if Qasim raised his right eyebrow, there would be no room for ifs or buts, and no one could say no. He was always behind the first embankment during the operations. During the 8 years that Qasim and Iranian forces were fighting with Saddam's army on the country's western borders, the drug mafia had invaded Iran's eastern and southeastern provinces bordering Afghanistan and Pakistan. So the IRGC commissioned a base to fight the mafia, the Quds base. And Qasim became the commander of the base, where the forces of his division were all from those provinces. Qasim's new mission was harder than the war. The drug mafia had hired mainly the oppressed and indigenous people of different villages of the provinces, and the difficulty of Qasim's mission was that he had to clear these provinces with maximum peace and minimum human casualties. Although the heads of the mafia groups tried to put Qasim in a tight spot by threatening him, he did his job fearlessly. He was close to death many times, and once his children were almost taken hostage. Once armed thugs took 90 police forces hostage and took him deep into Pakistani territory, Qasim followed them on a helicopter, and after finding their hideout, he got them released. Now, the mafia heads knew that they were not safe from Qasim, even across the border. He warned the rest of the miscreant gangs to either lay down their arms or wait for the consequences of their evil acts. Now, once again, it was time for forgiveness and kindness. Qasim tried to build an honorable life for the tribes through agriculture by building hundreds of water wells. He did not even neglect to take care of the family of the head of one of the most notorious armed gangs who was killed by his forces. So Qasim succeeded in restoring security to the southern and eastern provinces of Iran after 7 years, with the least casualties. But this was not the end of his mission. February 1998, Qasim was appointed as commander of the Quds Force. The unit was responsible for the IRGC's foreign operations from Afghanistan to Lebanon. What was the mystery in the name that was tied to Qasim's life? Starting military training from the Quds garrison in Kerman, commanding the battle in Operation Tariq al-Quds, fighting the drug mafia in the Quds base, and now commanding the Quds force. There were many such codes in Qasim's life. Most importantly, his right hand, he could not shoot with. The beginning of Qasim's new mission coincided with the beginning of the construction of U.S. bases in Iran's neighboring countries. Al-Qaeda also infiltrated the region and sowed the seeds of religious discord. Qasim had to do something. He first flew on a helicopter through the mountains of Tajikistan to go visit Ahmad Shah Massoud. The Sunni lion of the Panjshir Valley, who had been in isolation for some time. Qasim saved Massoud from isolation by strengthening his fighting power and supporting his forces. We do not even want to discuss what it means to transfer heavy military equipment to Afghanistan in just 48 hours. Qasim's next step was to connect the nucleus of resistance to other parts of his mission. Destination was the Iraqi Kurdistan, Iran's traditional ally. There, he strengthened his ties with the leaders of the region, as he did in Afghanistan. Training and sending military equipment and tools deepened Qasim's relationship with the Kurds. Qasim's next step was to go to Lebanon. And it was there that he found what he was looking for. Imad Mourniyeh, an omnipotent commander like himself, and Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, who was a strategist, a political theoretician who was aware of the equations of the region and the world, and at the same time, a full-fledged warrior. Those two men encouraged Qasim, the companions who never separated from him, and only death left a gap between them. It was not long after Haj Qasim, Imad, and Sayyid got to know each other that the Israeli army withdrew from Lebanon after 18 years of occupation without achieving anything. Six years later, the small Hezbollah became so strong that Israel decided to eradicate it with a massive offensive. But Qasim wasn't someone who would sit by and just watch the battle from a distance. Weeks after the start of the war, Israel did everything it could by massacring the people and destroying infrastructure to force Lebanon to concede defeat. In the victory celebration, only a few people knew that someone named Imad Mourniyeh existed. The specter of resistance had a quote-unquote strong supporter throughout the war.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering a dozen questions and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I'm Atal, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have a special guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Agha Muhammadi. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
So for today's discussion, we want to talk about how to remove our grief and problems according to Islamic beliefs. In fact, how to reach a kind of tranquility, ease of heart, it's better to say an ease of soul. Is there any recommendation in Islam, a special supplication to be read out to reach such a tranquility and calmness of heart or not?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi al-Tahirin. This is one of the very fundamental questions in human's life, and actually, this is one of the goals of life. Yes. It means that. Why? What is the ultimate goal that people are looking for in their life? Some people, some philosophers, some psychologists, they say that it's to get happiness. And again, there are some differences on the issue of happiness. Or at least is to get rid of the pains and to reach to a kind of a relief in the life.
Yes.
So this is the whole story of life. Mm-hmm. So if those who are believers like us, we believe that the happiness should be for this material life and also to get it in another realm of life, that we will have it in the journey of life. Those who have a secular and materialistic view, they say that no, the life is limited to this material life, and we just have to get the happiness and relief in this life. But anyhow, both groups agree that we are looking for happiness in the life, yes, and we are looking for a kind of tranquility or yes, peace of mind.
Yes.
This is the aim of life.
Mm-hmm. It does not depend on which school of thought you are believing, as you said. All the people around nobody is looking for pain. For example, difficulties or problems.
Yeah, of course, people have different understanding of this, of happiness. They define it in different ways according to what they find happiness in.
Yes.
So somebody may find it in a luxurious car. Somebody may find it in being famous. Somebody is, for somebody is power. For somebody is money. For somebody is food. Mm-hmm. It differs. But anyhow, these are acts. Mm-hmm. You know, when you are playing soccer and you are a famous soccer player, playing soccer is an act. Act is not the ultimate goal.
Yes.
So what is the purpose behind this act? Mm-hmm. So they may say that I want to be famous. I want to do show my skills. Mm-hmm. I want to be beloved. So, you see, there is a state of mind that is there behind whatever act that we do. And here, what matters, there are several elements that matter. And one of them is the anthropology that we have.
Yes.
So you see that there are two aspects of epistemological and psychological background or aspect or dimension to this point. I mean, how we can get happiness. So without having a proper anthropology, without having a proper cosmology, without having a proper epistemology, we cannot get the benefit out of the acts and the rituals in religion.
Yes.
Lots of people have problem in these areas. They come to recite dhikr, they come to recite Quran, and at the end they say that it's not giving us the happiness, the relief
the
of mind that we
yes,
are looking for. Why? Because you have problems somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
First, you have to solve that problem. So ma'rifah and epistemological side is very important.
Yes.
That's why you see that in hadiths, we have several hadiths mm-hmm. saying that to think for a second, for a minute, for a moment is better than worshipping for 76 years.
Yes. Okay.
Why? Because 70-60 years of worship, just doing some rituals without knowing what you are doing, is not going to give you that relief of mind.
Mm-hmm.
But if you solve one philosophical question or problem in your mind, then it changed the life and your approach to life dramatically.
Of course, the public people, you know, especially in the modern world, since so many people are busy with different things in comparison to the past, we could say that in the past, not only believers, but even in the Western countries, the people had these peace of mind and relief more than nowadays, you know. In this industrialized world with all these movements, you know, coming here, going there, being busy around the clock, okay? So the pains of heart and mind are more than before. Now, the question is that, can religion, especially Islam, and the teaching of Islam help us to dedicate a specific time during the day, in 24 hours we have, to our relief of mind and soul or not?
Yeah, this is very important aspect of life that we always, people always ignore it. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's why I said anthropology,
It is because, you know, we may find our happiness in working long hours, getting more money, and having the different facilities, and being busy. The modern life is very quick.
Yes.
And the distractions, the mind occupations are so much. In the past, people had few needs, just somewhere, something to wear, something to eat, a shelter. And almost that was all. So people had lots of free time. Mm-hmm. But now life is very busy, and this is the nature of the modern life.
That's right.
And in this very quick, busy life, people lose something, and that is themselves, mm-hmm. their soul. And so if a person has a wisdom of life, mm-hmm. then they will find that to get the happiness, you need to also, beside whatever you are achieving from the material objects around you,
yes.
to find that there is something as you, as self, yes. yourself, and you have to, and also that needs to be flourished, nourished, and it should be taken care of.
Yes.
And that's why I said anthropology is very important, yes. here.
IRIB English Radio presents Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to English Radio at irib.ir. Praises to Allah, all glory to Allah. We
worship Allah and no one but Allah. Around the world nowadays, there are so many, we can say, psychological, for example, trends or manners in order to get that relief. Some people claim, for example, yoga, some people, for example, sports, some people even dancing and music in order to find such a relief, which are not absolutely, we can say, proved by the religion of Islam. In fact, in order to get rid of those pains, you are not at the same time allowed to get into any other way, isn't it? Because the law of Sharia is over there to be observed, and when Sharia is over there, there are its own specific recommendations for you how to reach such peace of mind.
Yeah, actually, this as I don't want to get into Sharia right now.
Okay.
So my discussion is very general.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to limit the discussion just to Islam, because lots of audience might not be Muslim. I hope that our words are reaching non-Muslims as well. Because this is the nature of the modern life. One of the positive sides is that if you have anything to serve humanity, it will be seen, it will be received. And so I'm just not looking from the Islamic perspective at the issue. Of course, I will come back to the Islamic side of that.
Yes.
So what matters is that we as humans, this is the common point with all humanity, with all human beings, that whatever I said up to now. So to have a proper anthropology, how do you define man?
Mm-hmm.
What is the definition of man? Because of that definition, then you will explain, you will define, you will set up the aims, the goals, and happiness. So as much as you have a perfect in depth concept of human being, then you will have stronger happiness.
Yes.
This is not according to Islam or whatever religion.
Okay.
This is human being.
Yes,
as to the extent that the pleasures you have in the life are not material.
Mm-hmm.
The state and the level of the pleasure will be stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Material life is limited. Material pleasures are limited. Imagine if we see, if an example, if the greatest material pleasures in the world is in a specific food.
Yes.
And you have paid a lot to get that food. Imagine that eating that food or this medicine or whatever this gives you the greatest amount of pleasure according to the materialistic understanding, the chemicals that it is, it creates in the body and whatever. So the moment that you prepare to eat the food,
yes,
then you receive a bad news. Your father passed away, your mother passed away, your son had an accident. Now there is a kind of disorder in the mind. Your mental state is hurt, is damaged.
Yes.
And now if you want to eat the food, there will be no pleasure.
There is no help to you.
It's not going to help. Yes. Why? Because there is some mental problem. That's why those people who make themselves happy with alcohol, dancing and yes. with this modern kind of amusement. You see, yes. when they are in serious challenges in their life, mm-hmm. then they appeal to alcohol, they appeal to drugs.
Yes.
So they go into those materials just to get relief of mind. And the relief of mind in that explanation means that to lose the awareness of mind. Mm-hmm. So you are not in the state of proper thinking.
So, sorry, Sheikh, there must be a differentiation now that when we are talking about the problems, are we talking about the mind? I mean, what's happening in the brain or your soul? Mm. Because those people, as you said, who get to drugs or alcohol or something like that, used to be non-believers maybe, or at least they are thinking about the psychological problems. That's why psychology in the Western terminology got to the scene and proposes some solutions to the problem. So I think when we take a look from the religious perspective, then there comes the concept of soul, which might be very much different from the mind, isn't it?
Yeah. No, as I said, my discussion was a little bit general to say that what are the reality and yes. what is the reality and what are the realistic things on the ground that yes. people, this is how people live.
Yes.
And of course, in the secular understanding, you have psycho and man.
Yes.
Man has some mental reactions to yes. specific, you know, factors. Mm-hmm. So they don't believe in soul, so they don't study soul.
Yes. But
of course, we believe that there is a soul, and they just look at the reactions. Mm-hmm. There is no essence as soul, but we believe that soul exists. But anyhow, I'm saying that people may find pleasures or relief in music and these things.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, when there are serious challenges, you see that it doesn't help.
Yes.
And it doesn't give that kind of real tranquility, that yes. real peace of mind that you can find it in the true believers.
Yes.
So here I said the ma'rifah, the knowledge is very important.
Yes.
And this knowledge is not just reading. Mm-hmm. This I'm not talking about just reading books.
Yes.
Lots of people are reading books, teaching books, delivering lectures, yes. but they might have some serious problems in their personal life. Mm-hmm. We have seen these people yes. and so to know something is different from having ma'rifah. Ma'rifah in Islamic terminology is a kind of knowledge which comes with a kind of tasting it. So yes. that the matter of tasting is yes. very important.
Okay.
So there's a difference between knowing something and tasting something.
That's right.
You know, I remember when I was young, I used to deliver lectures from very, very young age. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I happened to deliver lectures on the rights of parents, the rights of father, and the state of being father. But the moment you become father yourself, then you yes. see that it's totally different. Now you taste it. Mm-hmm. So there's a difference between knowing something and tasting
That's
something.
Right. Okay.
So this is ma'rifah.
Yes.
Then you can say that when you're talking about being a father, you know what exactly it is, mm-hmm. means that you have tasted it. With your heart.
Yes.
And when I'm talking about ma'rifah and epistemology, the kind of knowledge that you have in your heart, something that is very well established and you believe in it.
Yes.
That can help you. I mean, now I'm talking about the need to the epistemology and what kind of epistemology and what kind of anthropology we need here. we can talk about it. And
okay.
I can say that what kind of definition of human can give what level of happiness.
That's right. Okay, inshallah, we have to continue our discussion upcoming episode of the program. Now we are done for this episode. Thank you very much, Sheikh Al-Mahmadi. It was really nice of you. You know, we will continue our discussion, get into more practical guidelines according to, as you said, this epistemology, as you're talking about. I think, what kind of epistemology are we after, and are there any practical recommendations for or not? It was very kind of you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. The another episode. God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban li Ali wa Husayn wa Hasan. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي وحسين وحسن.
Everyone has a beloved, a new dear friend. But I have you, my dear. May God protect you, my dear. May God protect you.
IRIB English Radio, for those who seek the truth.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to IRIB English Radio. The program is Islamic Upbringing, where we discuss the issues about children and youth according to the Islamic teachings and ahadith. Today we have Sister Salma, who has been talking to us about some very important points. Sister Salma, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to our show.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you for having me.
Sister Salma, you have been telling us about how it's so necessary to, you know, kind of bring that environment for a child to become more studious. And some of the things that you said that were very important was that don't make them feel that studies are, you know, hindering their hobbies, and help them be more organized. This organization is going to help them throughout their life, and don't make it too strict. So, do you have any more points to add?
Yes, encourage your child's achievements. Even if they achieve a score that was more than the, you know, previous score, but it's still less, for example, you always have to appreciate that. that, you know, that those 3 points were more like as in my score.
Yeah.
I tried so hard and we tried together. Look, we got the achievement. And Allah is there to help us. Even now we can do more than this. And, you know, get it so like something so beautiful, a feeling in his heart that they never, you know, lag behind working and, you know, keeping on working ahead to get more and more. Another point that we should need to realize is that focus on the strengths of the person. And this is more or less the same way in the achievements of the person. Focus on the strengths.
Yeah.
Whatever they are good at. You know, for example, if they make good at, they may be good at art, for example, focus on that. Know that, you know, like appreciate the fact that they do so good art, you know, that can be so, you know, like beneficial for them in the future. Or anything creativity-wise. Or maybe they are so good at speech, maybe. Or they're so good at reciting. Or they're so good at Quran. Focus on that more. So they know that they have one point, you know,
yeah,
to lean on.
Maybe give them opportunities.
Yeah,
to,
give them opportunities, exactly.
Show it.
To show that, yeah, that's true. And then another last but not least, we must say that make every day a learning day. And that's very beautiful. Never forget that, you know, Allah has created us in this time span, and every moment that we don't think of Allah, we will regret on that day, like Imam Baqir alayhi salam says. So, in actuality, every moment that we don't have knowledge and don't learn more, then we will regret on that day. Because learning more makes a mind astute and think more, and of course, get broad-minded, the right education, of course, the right way to impart education, all these things needs to really be taken into consideration. So, every day should be a learning process. Every moment even should be a learning process. If not every moment, everything that we do should be a learning process. So it makes a person more reflective, more reflect, you know. They say that a person who reflects on everything and takes ibrah from it, Allah's mercy descends on him. Of course, Allah's mercy is always descending, but we containers will grasp that mercy. So it's very important that anything we do, for example, if we are cooking, we are learning as well. If we are, for example, learning, we are learning as well.
Yeah.
If we are reading a story, we are learning as well. If we are playing football, also that we are learning how to be more balanced and how to run more. Or, you know, any exercise we are doing, we are learning as well. So we should not, you know, like feel, exclude, you know, luxury from knowledge.
True.
Yeah, that luxury should be even of knowledge. And this is very, like, something that is very hard to do. You need to be polished on that. You need to read on that. A parent needs to find out, remind yourself, and also practice. Practice makes perfect, of course. So, inshallah, little by little, our children will become angels around the world and start, you know, benefiting the whole world, inshallah, which we want, yeah, when we pray, Rabbana hablana min azwajina wa dhurriyatina qurrata a'ini wa ja'alna lil muttaqina imama, when we pray for our spouses and children to be the imam of the muttaqin, how they will be polished, their knowledge will grow.
Yeah.
So it starts with this, giving them that encouragement to learn even in school, but to learn even outside school, to polish their other potentials, to make everything a learning experience, to not let a day go by without learning, or a moment, you know, that is useful for him to learn, point that out for him, share it out, show your enthusiasm so that he can also get that positive energy. Inshallah, that he will succeed in that. And this mother, this parent will also succeed in encouraging the child to learn more.
Definitely. I feel like we learned a lot. I'm sure this parent is going to be able to work on, you know, getting their child to like studying because of all these very interesting and important points that you've given us. And I think one thing that kind of caps it is that kind of bringing this confidence into the child. Once all of this happens, all of this is done, the child's confidence, etemad benefs, you know, grows so much that they feel that they can reach up to the stars. And I feel like, unfortunately, a lot of people who don't have this confidence miss out on so much. So
yeah,
being a good parent is so important. Inshallah,
yeah,
we learn and try and be those kind of parents. Inshallah.
Sure.
We're just going to take a short break and we'll be continuing soon after.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Welcome back to IRIB English Radio, and we have been discussing about some very interesting questions. So somebody came with this question and said, what should a teacher do when he has a class of 10-year-olds creating a lot of noise time and again? At times it gets very difficult to control such children.
Yeah, especially in the classes when there's a teacher who is supposed to take maybe a 3-hour long class, of course at intervals, right?
Yeah.
So first of all, I suggest that he should have no space in his timetable. For example, of course, apart from the breaks that they have, he should, in that 1 hour or 40-50 minute class, he should not let the children just be doing other things.
Okay.
For example, sometimes it happens that the homework is checked, you know, so the teacher moves around and sees every child's homework. So at that time, he should give the other children activities to do.
Yeah.
You know, so for example, he's marking the first child's paper, so the others should be doing activities. When he goes to the second one, the first one should just also start doing his activities. So there should be no space for them to create an uproar and mischief and throwing things at one another and exchanging letters. This happens more obviously. Another thing is that to maintain the awe and respect of the teacher should not disconnect himself from the students.
Okay.
He should always have this rapport with them, you know?
Yeah.
Like keep on talking to them. For example, if he's giving them the activity, he should move around and say things like, remember to write very neatly. Okay? I'm going to check that too.
Yeah.
Or then, I hope you slept well. You should be alert in this because you need to think more. So move around and keep on saying small statements so that the children can be forced to be alert and keep on feeling the fact that the presence of the teacher is counted, so we can't make any mischief in the midst. Okay? So this is very important. Also, time and again, the teacher should have this kind of relationship with the students to make them feel lighthearted and happy.
Yeah.
So he shouldn't be so strict that the children feel very scared of. Or he shouldn't be so friendly that he should be like the age mate of the children.
Yeah, no. They'll take advantage of
him. Yeah, exactly. He should be in between, you know, in perfect equilibrium, doing his things, yet at the same time, having this awe and respect for himself that the children cannot take advantage of him. And I think that's about it, that how children can, really start respecting him. And of course, at the right moments, even if the child needs to go to places like the restroom, he should allow them so that the child doesn't feel frustrated, you know. Or if the child, there's a certain child creating problem, he can nicely tell the child that I want to also share your conversation with you. Can you involve me? And the child will feel scared. This is not the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Or can I share the joke with you?
Mm.
So he knows where strictness is applied and where friendliness is applied. At the same time that he's very, easygoing with the children, as in talking to them, reminding them things, smiling with them. But he knows he's strict in his own way. So he can't be taken advantage of. But it's a hard task.
Yeah, it's
to become a teacher of one class for 3 or 4 hours consecutively. Yeah, if it's a 1 hour class or a 50 minute class and the teachers keep on changing, then, even the students find it easier.
Yeah.
But in lower classes, we don't have that. We have one teacher for all the subjects through. As you go to higher classes, then we have special teachers for different subjects because they get harder, right?
I think like having that command in the class, not that, like you said, not overly strict, but not overly friendly. We're just going to take another short break and we'll be continuing soon after.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
Welcome back. I think a lot of the times when we were young, I used to really look up to my teachers who were such, like not those who are too friendly, but those who are kind of
I used to feel in awe of them, you know, this teacher has something, you know, I want to please him, I want to do well, so he praises me. I feel like this kind of character has to be built, has to worked on.
That charisma has to be there, and it grows